It's Morning Talk. It's coming to you on this Heritage Day, Wednesday, 24th of September. It might be a public holiday, but it's still Workers' Day. Workers continue to be workers right through the country. And today we're talking about something that we talked about. On previous Workers' Day Wednesdays, we discussed the conditions under which health workers are working in our public hospitals, talking about the extreme conditions at most public hospitals, causing some doctors, nurses to leave and seek pasture somewhere. This contributed, the kind of conditions we're told contributed to many of them leaving. But as they leave, they perpetuate the cycle where what the current staff shortages become even greater. Patients suffering and those health workers left behind, forced to endure worse conditions and much more in terms of their working conditions. In the studio with me is Mary Malik, the President of the Federation of Democratic Trade Unions of South Africa, FEDUSA. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for coming through, ma'am.
Morning. You're welcome.
Good morning to you. And in our Pretoria studio, we have Dr. Percy Mahlathi, Deputy Director General of Health, providing us with the government's perspective. Doctor, thanks very much and welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
Good morning to you, sir. And on the line, Professor Joshua Dambisia from the University of Limpopo, the School of Pharmacy at the University of Limpopo. Prof, good morning to you. Happy Heritage Day.
Good morning to you too, and happy Heritage Day to you and the listeners.
Thanks for coming through. Let's maybe start the first question, Mamaleti, pointing it to rather the doctor in Pretoria to give us an indication of how extensive is the problem of health workers leaving our public health services, going to work abroad or going into the private sector. Do we have statistics?
Well, let me start by saying we think that we had a serious challenge maybe towards the late 90s and beginning of 2000. Although we do not have a system that gives us up-to-date, statistics, on how many people are leaving the country and all that. But just to give an indication, with the United Kingdom, in the year 2001-2, there were about 1,200 plus registrations of nurses from South Africa who registered in the UK working there. But that number came down in 2005 to about 156. So if you look at, the trend, it was actually going down. But we think that the major losses from the public sector are to the private sector and the NGO sector. But it also varies according to the professions, because nurses in the country are mostly employed by the public, health sector in their greater numbers, unlike it would be the situation with doctors, where you find that quite a number of them are in the private sector.
Dr. Mahlathi, we seem to be having a problem with your line from that side, but conversation continues. You say a greater loss in the department happens to be to the private sector here in South Africa. Which health workers, which health professionals are the ones that leave the public sector for the private sector?
Well, the categories that leave in big numbers are the doctors, the pharmacists, and of course the dentists. And while you get also, amongst other professions like physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and so on. I think with nursing, it's a little bit different, because it may not necessarily be the quantum, the numbers of people that are leaving, but far much more the loss at a higher level in terms of people with skills, with experience, and so on. So the pattern, you'll find that it would be different according to the professions.
Let's bring in here the president of FEDUSA, Mary Malete. Once again, good morning to you, ma'am.
Good morning.
From a trade union perspective, what are the reasons cited for these people leaving the profession and either migrating or going into the private sector?
I think, number one, let me start by the legacy that was formed in the 90s, when most of the nurses professionals were given packages. they had not been recovered. Most of them took packages. That's number one.
And packages actually affected the cream in terms of the most experienced.
Yes, because most of the cream and experienced people left the service. And then number two, it's poor salaries that we continue fighting for all the time. And then number three is the quality of equipment that frustrates the nurses when they work. And number four, unfortunately, what happens was the private services were introduced in public services, whereby then the nurses who work on public service would go off within an hour, then go on to the private, because the private within the public service pays higher than the normal public service.
Looking at the professionals themselves, Professor Joshua Dambisia is with the School of Pharmacy at the University of Limpopo. We train these people at high cost and they leave the country. It's from your side of the world, what has been cited as a cause for this migration, either for reasons of going abroad or joining the private sector? What have you found to be the major cause for this, Prof?
Well, my colleagues have already hinted upon factors within the health system.
And you share their views on the factors that they have raised?
No, I'm saying my colleagues, Dr. Mashlat and the president of FEDUSA, have already touched upon the local issues. The one they haven't touched upon are the so-called pull factors. The inadequate training and availability of personnel in the richer countries in the north is a very significant factor in motivating people to leave because of that demand on that side. And of course, perceptions of higher pay and better working conditions, better career opportunities or training opportunities elsewhere.
Is it the case? Do these people that leave these shores actually get better training when they get, particularly when they go and work overseas? Do they enjoy better living conditions? I know the pay will always be bigger.
Not all the time. That's why I said the perception.
Yeah.
The person intending to leave has the perception that everything will be better on the other side. And towards the turn of the millennium, there were quite aggressive recruitment agencies who were selling these kinds of perceptions. Fortunately, with initiatives at an international level, Commonwealth, World Health Assembly, and so on, those have toned down. But that perception that things would be better, that the pay would be better, there would be better career opportunities, there would be better training opportunities, tended to pull people from South Africa and other less resourced countries to the richer countries. And then, of course, internally, as my colleagues have touched upon, the poor pay levels, the poor working conditions, the threats of infection, particularly with HIV, was a significant factor at some point. I should like to think that with the availability of antiretrovirals and the lessening of the threat of HIV as a death sentence, I should like to hope that perhaps that element has died down.
Professor Dambisia, you speak of training people. The type of products institutions of higher learning the product that they give us, the public, and give the world out there. Are we bringing out quality graduates ready for the challenges out there?
I should like to think so, yes, because most of our programs, I think, produce products that can compete with the best of them around the world. It's a matter of adapting to the local situations when the graduate gets to that particular to a different country, but I think the basic training is up to world standards. Yes,
Dr. Mashlati, let me come back to you on this. Mema Malete and Professor Dambisia both echoed the issue of poor working conditions at departmental level. What has been cited as the most disturbing of working conditions, and what is the department doing to make things better for our health professionals to stay?
Well, There's quite a number of interventions that have been put in place. You know, the first one is the one that raises a lot of emotions, is around remuneration. You will know that last year we introduced a new remuneration system for the nursing professionals called occupational specific dispensation. It's been quite a costly exercise. It's cost, government about between 1.7 and 1.8 billion rands, you know. Now, coupled with that has been to improve, you know, with the career, you know, a pathway, so that the younger ones that come in can actually have a longer, you know, a career span, you know, within the that particular profession. I think there are other issues that were raised, for instance, regarding the quality of equipment and all that. We do know that at a national level, all the provinces have been looking at, you know, supplying better, you know, equipment so that all the health professionals can be able to do the procedures that are...
What is the reason for this laxity in delivery, particularly delivery of equipment? Because something that we see happening in private institutions, so it is not that you have to go and virtually manufacture it. It is available. But we have scientists plan out patents. You know, we are talking of things that are available out there in the market, and we're told yes. All you need to do is sign a check and bring them in.
Yeah, well, you would sign a check if you've got bags and bags of money, you know. As you know, the health sector, we've argued that the health sector has not been adequately funded over a long period of time. So I think that is a major challenge, because you will not go and buy expensive equipment. Even if you've got the money, you've got to make sure that you've got the technical support to look after that equipment.
But it is precisely the expectation on the public sector to do that, to lead the way in terms of training those that are supposed to be manning this expensive equipment. We should be leading.
Yes, I agree. I agree. But I think we need to look back. You see, these problems did not start, you know, necessarily in 1994, as some people think. I remember back, you know, in the 80s, you know, when there were certain policies that were taken by the then government, for instance, limited private practice, which meant that consultants, senior consultants, could also run their private practices. Nowadays, you actually get academics telling you that is partly contributed to killing academic medicine, because people did not dedicate that much time. Way back, the public sector used to lead in innovations, training, and all that. Mm. At the present moment, quite a lot of that happens in the private sector. So it's not something that has happened overnight, but definitely that has to be reversed. And I think there is a national focus, you know, amongst both public and private sector professionals to say we need to rebuild, you know, with that capacity within the public health sector. So that needs to be funded, of course. You can put all policies and wishes, but if you don't have the budgets, you know, to be able to address that would be a big challenge.
I think I would concur with what the professor has said in reversing. Because as much as we are saying we are moving forward and don't want to look back to where we come from, but I think the practices in the past assisted a lot in helping the health sectors to be manned. Number one, for an example, you would have student doctors coming into hospitals with their professors, for an example. And those students would even assist, for an example, to try and man the shortages in hospitals. And then number two, I think the other thing is training, especially of nurses. I'll talk about nurses because I'm a nurse. We used to have this category of enrolled nurses. Enrolled nurses who were trained in the mission hospitals were equivalent to the trained professional nurses. And I'm saying this because I would quite often, as a manager, I would echo and compliment the job that is done by an auxiliary, that is the staff nurse with white epaulets, and the midwifery section, whereby there's a lot of shortage also. The green epauletted midwives were doing a lot of work contributing. And those, I'm talking about those nurses who were born nurses, who took up the profession not as money making, but as a calling.
Excuse me, let us go to the line. Sebastian in Cape Town, you're talking about those pull factors that Professor alluded to. Good morning, Sebastian.
Yes, good morning. Would you allow me to pertinent comments?
Go ahead.
The first is on the pull factors and the very much higher salaries overseas that are drawing a lot of our medical and other professions. There was recently a building industry comment that all they're short of professionals because of the pull factor of the higher salaries overseas. I've long held that the rand is a much undervalued currency, and one of the ways to keep our graduates in all spheres in the country is to recover our rand. This would make the overseas salaries less competitive and our salaries much higher in relation to overseas if our rand was recovered substantially, and as I've said, it's an undervalued currency. Also, on the question of equipment and the limitations of budget, which lead to less equipment being bought than could be with the budget limitations, if our rand was recovered, then they'd be able to buy more overseas sourced equipment with the same rand budget. The second point I'd like to make is that there's an underproduction of doctors in this country versus our potential. There's an intense competition to get into medical schools, and many people who would make the grade just don't get in because of the limited numbers. This was confirmed in a conversation with the chancellor of a major university who has a medical school, and his take on things was that that this point is totally correct, that we're underproducing. We could produce more, and his reason was that he doesn't have the budget to increase the numbers taken into his particular medical school, and this is, I think, falls on government, that they need to push more money into all the medical schools so that we can up the annual production, which is about, believe, below 2,000 doctors per year from all 8 medical schools, perhaps into the region of 10,000. The medical profession might not like this because it might mean more competition on salaries, but it's in the national interest.
Dr. Mahlathi, I know Sebastian will agree there's very little that we can talk on the value of the rand vis-a-vis other currencies, but yes, the underproduction of medical personnel from our institutions is something that I think you can comment on.
Yes, definitely. I would like to comment on that, because we've engaged the academics, the Committee of Deans of Health Sciences in the country for all the 8 medical schools. We've also engaged the Colleges of Medicine of South Africa. That's a body that does the examining for the specialists, you know, in this country. Now, there are a number of issues. You know, the production issue is not only, you know, we're getting students in there. It's not only about the physical facilities, how many laboratories you have and all that. It's also about the staff to do the teaching. Because, you've got to have a requisite number of faculty so that they will be able to do that. Anyway, what we have now currently is that engagement and the research work that we be getting results by the end of the year. That actually says if we were to bump up the production of health professionals in all categories, not only medicine, what resource base do we need to be able to do that? And therefore, we can be able then to put a budget bill to Treasury, you know, to say over a period of time, this is what is required. Now, it's critical that we underscore the importance of the role of education institutions in that, because they are the people who produce these professionals. We work together to determine the quality that is required so that people can be able to handle, you know,
well, Doctor,
the challenges that we have.
We have, fortunately, an academic on the line from the School of Pharmacy. Prof.
Yes.
Dambisia, we are underproducing health professionals. Is that the case?
Yes, it is. It is.
Then bump it up. Somebody said. As somebody said, let's bump it up. I think Dr. Mahlathi said we can bump it up.
As the Deputy Director General is saying, it's a relatively complex issue, because traditionally the production of the higher professionals, the doctors, the pharmacists, and so on, is at the universities under the Department of Education. The demand for the professionals is in the Department of Health. So one of the things that has been missing, and I'm happy Dr. Mahlathi has already made the point, because we had this discussion with him when we met at a SADC Human Resources for Health meeting in Benin a few weeks ago. What has been missing is the dialogue between the Department of Health, the Department of Education, and the training institutions, the universities.
Let's take a word from a trade unionist in Freiburg, Michael. Good morning, Michael. who seem not to be able to connect with Michael. We have Johnson in Pretoria, who is a doctor. Good morning to you, doctor.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to comment about my experience in a public service. I've always regarded public service hospitals to be centers for academic areas. But unfortunately, the government has come up with a system where the hospitals are managed by, you know, teachers who are appointed as CEOs and nurses who are underqualified. And I think as a doctor, to be managed by somebody who's less qualified than yourself, I mean, that always leads to conflict. And in all the hospitals, especially rural hospitals, there is a lot of conflict between the so-called the CEOs, who are mainly nurses, and the doctor. And I think we must go back to the old system of using superintendents, where the doctors or the most qualified in an institution is the one who's heading the hospital.
Mama Lita, are you in agreement?
I think I couldn't agree more with what the doctor has said, because that's one thing. In fact, here I just I was going to raise a point on Barawana, for an example, if I have to mention a hospital where there is a CEO in that big hospital, and I don't think that CEO is quite okay with the different instruments used in different departments, specialized departments at Barawana the hospital. And the superintendent in the previous era would be a medical doctor who would know what is required. The deputy of that superintendent would be a nurse who is also trained. For an example, I was the second deputy in the hospital with intensive care, with administration, both, you know, at an honors level. And I had, you know, the nursing care on my fingertips. I couldn't agree more.
Dr. Mashati, you are the DDG responsible for human, for HR and management development. This is an anomaly we cannot live with.
Yes, let me just, you know, maybe modify what the colleagues have said. You see, we need to be cautious that we do not, in the process, you know, claim certain spaces of management to be only for particular professions. We had medical superintendents before. One of the major shortcomings was actually their training in more generic management issues, financial and all that. The pendulum swung towards, you know, people that are financially trained who had no insight into the health, you know, issues, and it became a problem. So, I mean, the view rail of the department is that going forward, what we need to do is that we need to get the best quality to run an organization that, like you would run a company. But you can't run a company if you don't have the insight into its core business. So what is required is that the people that would run, even if it's a doctor, they must actually get management training on those areas that they are trained.
Are we moving towards that scenario?
Yes, as we're moving towards that, even those that may not be health trained, they would actually have to be trained so that they fully understand all the intricacies of healthcare. Of course, it would be far much more difficult to understand fully the intricacies of health issues than it would be the other way around. But certainly the management, hospital management training programs that we have, for instance, assisted by France, you know, already were taking, I mean, people through that at the University of Witwatersrand and the University of KwaZulu-Natal, so as to be able to improve the quality of management. We've got to expand that.
It's Workers Wednesday. We're talking about the working conditions of World Heckos, particularly in our public institutions. Dr. Malikole Mashati, the DDG for HR and Management Development at the National Department of Health, is my guest in the Pretoria studio. In the studio with me, the president of FEDUSA, Mary Malete, and on the line from the University of Limpopo, the School of Pharmacy, Professor Yoshua Dambesia, are my guests. You can join in this conversation, particularly if you happen to be a health worker or a medical professional. Let's chew the card on this one. 0891-104-207.
For most people, gambling is harmless fun, but for some it can become a problem affecting their family or work life. If you need help with any kind of gambling problem, for yourself, a friend, a parent, or someone you care for, call the National Responsible Gambling Program Counseling Line on 0800-006-008. That's 0800-006-008. Remember, winners know when to stop. This message is brought to you by the South African Responsible Gambling Trust in the public interest.
Your views are important in helping Parliament help South Africa in realizing a better quality of life for all South Africans. Listen to your members of Parliament in your language. Listen to Talking with Parliament on SAFM at 11:35 every Thursday.
SAFM, in partnership with Peter Tureen Productions, offers you a unique and hysterically funny insight into the inner workings of radio drama. The stage of the Monte Cassino Theatre in Johannesburg is transformed into an SAFM drama studio, with Paul Slabolepsy's latest comedy for your ears only. While the actors set about creating a unique sound world around the microphone, life continues to unfold off the mic.
Right, scripts everyone. We'll be reading on mic, rehearsing with music and effects.
Who's picked up my script by mistake?
Oh, sorry.
What's happened to my bird whistle?
Fricky, you fine for rehearsal? Good. Now, scene one, Charmaine and Alistair.
The one we did earlier.
That's the one, sweetie. Main mic.
Main mic, this one.
Yes, don't panic. It's only a rehearsal.
Hold your horses. Stop or pass. Won't be long.
Oh, not him again.
Don't mind me, Owens. I've just come to oil the gate.
That's fine. You just go and oil your gate.
Right, Tommy. We'll have a...
What are you doing? Give me that!
Huh?
You imbecile!
Hugo, what's his case now?
I'm sorry, you can't oil that thing.
But it's squeaking!
It's supposed to squeak.
A gate?
Yes.
Like this?
Nominated for this year's SA Comedy Awards, the play stars Michael Richard, Paul Slabolepsy, Louise St. Clair, Graham Hopkins, Molefi Monaisa, Mpo Osei Tutu, Buddy Bo Butler, and Ralph Lawson, who also directed the play. Don't miss For Your Ears Only at Peter Tureen's Monte Cassino Theatre from the 2nd of October to the 16th of November, and at the Theatre on the Bay in Cape Town from the 20th of November to the 13th of December. Booking at the theatre and at CompuTicket. Radio is going to the theatre, and so should you.
Talk on SAFM. SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
It's Workers' Wednesday, and we're talking about the state of health of our health services, particularly with regard to workers, health workers, the conditions under which they operate. Straight to the lines we go. We've got a number of health professionals calling in. Dr. Pile in the Eastern Cape. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
We are well.
Good morning to all your panelists there. Mm-hmm. And my yeah. friend, Percy.
Good morning.
Yes, Dr. Pile.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, in healthcare, the issues are more complex. And while we appreciate everything that the panel has been saying, there are two fundamental problems in South Africa that needs to seriously be addressed. One is funding. I agree with Mr. Maslati, Dr. Maslati, when he says that the health funding of South Africa is skewed. We spend more than 40 billion rands on 17% of the private citizens and the private health care, and yet we spend almost the same amount of money for the rest of the 87% of the people. So this funding story is a problem. The second problem that we have is that health is a provincial function. Despite the best efforts on a national to make policy and to effect things, it depends on what happens at the provincial level. And one must understand that, you know, delivery of healthcare is a provincial function, and if your province does not operate properly, despite the best planning that you can have, it's going to fall down at the provincial level. The third thing we wanted to say is that despite increasing the salaries, sometimes increasing the salaries of staff, and if it's not communicated properly, you know, leads to a lot of resentment. OSD is an example. Occupational special dispensations cost the government millions of rands, and it gave it to the people. But it never explained to the nurses on the ground how it is going to work. So eventually at the hospital level, you found every nurse more worried about how this money is going to be paid out and frustrated about the process than rather worried about how much they got an increase. Lastly, I wanted to say the burden of disease in South Africa is increasing greatly with HIV and other things like that. So there's an increased demand on the health services, and the proportionate funding is not being met by this demand. With that, I'd just like to end.
Thank you, Dr. Pile. Before I get responses on that one, Michael in Frontberg, member of NEHAU, if you could make it sweet and short, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your panel.
Good morning, Michael.
Okay.
I just want to highlight the two problems that we encountered in public service. That is, in terms of your budget, that over and above the years, we have been seeing a rollover of budget whereby department are unable to spend the money that they have been allocated to. The other thing is your patient-nurse ratio, that this particular number of patients should be nursed by this particular nurse. That's still a problem, that there's still a workload in public hospital,
yeah.
Whereby you find that most of the nurses would go to private sector and moonlight. You find that a nurse would work in a private hospital for a day, would get R1,000.
Yeah. Okay, Michael.
Those are the challenges that we are facing. The other challenge is the epidemic of HIV and AIDS, that we need to absorb those people who are working with these counselors who are AIDS counselors in your private sectors or your NGOs. That's a big challenge, because you find that most of our people are affected and infected with the HIV and AIDS epidemic.
Thanks for coming through, Michael. I'd like Dr. Mahlathi to address, firstly, the issues raised by Dr. Pile.
Thank you very much. I think the issues that Siva raised, you know, are critical. Let me start with the health being a provincial function. Yes, it's true. That is a provincial function. And really, it actually depends on how the province allocates, you know, the budgets internally. But I think one of the major challenges we have is the question of the capacity. Even the question of rollover of budgets and all that, you'll find that sometimes it's not because of, the lack of willingness to spend the money, but it's because of the systems that we have, the financial systems that we have, because they would allow you to spend so much in a particular, period. And
Dr. Mahlathi, the split that Dr. Pile alluded to in terms of funding on private,
yes,
and the 13%, 87% going to private, is that the true split? And should we be doing that?
Yes, that's a true split, and it always varies whether you're funding, using that money to fund 17% or 20% of the population. It's an issue that, National Treasury, is looking at, and we've got to resolve it as a country, because part of the challenge we have is that 17%, even though we might say it's in the private sector, but when it comes to patients are free to go public, private, there are none that are said you'll only be in the private sector, and that's it. It is a serious challenge in terms of the funding of the health system. Maybe let me just, add one, part on the question of the increasing, burden of disease. Of course, the public health sector is the first point of contact, patients with the health system. And the majority of people get, their services there. And over the years, there's been an increase. That is why we've felt, the pressure points in terms of providing human resources, in terms of increasing the programs, funding them more, equipment and so on, and therefore the health system is under strain. One issue that I would like to address around the communication on remuneration models, I agree with Dr. Pile that that's an area that needs to be improved, but what had been done with the OSD in nurses is that all provinces have participated in this, last week we were in the Eastern Cape to try and actually address those issues.
Because,
and in many instances, you've got to address the reality versus expectations that people have.
Dr. Mahlathi, excuse my continuous interjection. Very, very pressed with regards to time here. And I wanted to get word from Mema Maleti, particularly regarding issues of communications on OSD and the patient-nurse ratio that Michael spoke about.
I think Michael is right on the nurse-patient ratio, whereby you expect two nurses to man a hospital of 35 patients, and those nurses being tired and burnt out, they won't be able to care for those patients. And I think I would concur with him when he comes to, building in the AIDS counselors, the home-based carers, because home-based carers, they are the ones who go out and care for these patients. Instead of patients being in hospital without care, then the home-based carers can go and care for these patients with relatives. coming to OSD, it's true that it hasn't been communicated well. But as recent as Thursday, Friday, I was in Giani, whereby the OSD is a contentious issue to nurses, because they say that whether you have a housing loan or you don't have a housing loan, you still get the 500 OHD. And that does not make sense to me. Why, if a person doesn't have a loan, then he gets subsidized? Why is it?
Yeah, we'll be coming to you, Prof, from Limpopo. Let's just take one more call from Lindani, who's a nurse at Barra. Lindani, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm well, sir. If you could make it short and brief for us, please.
Okay, yes, I'll try to be short. I'm Lindani Somawane. I'm calling also on behalf of the North and International Organization. You know, there are a lot of issues. I've been listening since the show started. Né? OSD is one of the things that they've been trying to actually curb the exodus of health professionals in the field. It just started with nurses. It's going to continue, to my understanding, to the doctors, social workers, and other categories within the institution, within the health sector. But the point is that it's not all about money. The working conditions. I'm currently working in Kasala Paragona Hospital, and I enjoy working there. But the problem that is there, you know, the working conditions. They are not tools of production. We are willing to work, but what is happening is this: when things go wrong, the healthcare workers are in the firing line. Mm. Are the ones to be blamed by the visitors, patients, and actually they are the ones to be charged. But now, the working environment is not so conducive. That's why people are running away to private sector.
Yeah.
And to overseas. And also, I want to have a bite with the case of the leadership is within the institution. I don't think it matters really if who's leading the hospital. Is it a nurse? Is it a social worker? Is it a farmer? I mean, what matters most is a skill. If you're having a leadership skill, for instance, in Barra, we have a CEO who's a nurse.
We need leadership skills. Lina, I'm going to butt in there and stop it. But before I come back to you, Mamalet, Prof,
yes,
what do we do to retain skills and experience of our health workers? And what can we learn from other African countries on the continent?
Well, as Dr. Pile rightly put it, it is a complex issue. Therefore, there is really no single solution that will work, but a combination of solutions. And I think the starting point should be to listen to the health workers, because quite often those at policy and decision-making level come up with wonderful solutions, such as the OSD. They roll it out and it becomes a bone of contention. Why? Because they have consulted at the high level, but they actually haven't spoken to the nurse on the ground and say, if we restructure your pay like this and enhance it in this aspect and that, will you be happy with it? And increasingly it is being seen that measures that are consultative from the beginning work much better than those that are consultative at the rollout stage. And pay by itself, of course, will not be enough. But to address the kind of issues Lindani has just mentioned, the working conditions,
yeah,
and the whole set of non-financial incentives. There have been success examples in countries like Zambia, where they were struggling to staff rural facilities, and then they put in at project level. Though,
I think we will have. I know I asked the question, but I think we will have to devote more time to talking about those examples, for time has run. Okay. Okay, Professor Joshua Dambesia is with the School of Pharmacy at the University of Limpopo. Dr. Mashati, last word from you.
Yeah, just quickly, I think on the OSD one, I just want to make a statement that remuneration system was worked out, developed, and negotiated with the trade unions at the bargaining council. So it was not, you know, a top-down kind of, you know, a development. We are aware of the challenges, but by and large, nursing has benefited from that.
Dr. Maliko Lepesi Mahlati is DDG HR and Management Development at the National Department of Health. And also thanks to you, Mema Maliti.
Thank you.
Mema Maliti is Meru Maliti, the president of FEDUSA. This has been Workers Wednesday, and we sure will be coming back with issues around health workers and devote more time to it. But it is 11 o'clock.